Excuses, I'm sorry.
Just want to summarize before we move on that my understanding of the Rambam, that the law of a dayan to be chozer, the dayan who was melamed chus can't be chozer melamed chov. So the Rambam said that is derived from the general law of the pasuk, that is losan al riv, that a dayan in dinei nefashos and only in dinei nefashos is not permitted to be inclined to reach a decision on the basis of what somebody else has said. That's the losase. He has to operate in accordance with his own das, with his own knowledge. And the basis for that, as I tried to explain, this is my interpretation, was that the masa umaton of dinei nefashos is distinctive. It is not the ordinary masa umaton of a bezdin that's just deliberating, engaging in an abstract search for what they consider to be the din. That's not the case. But rather, two things. First of all, it's founded upon the tzivoy, the command of vihitzilu, v'shaftu vihitzilu. So it's a different type of mishpat over here that's in operation. Because generally speaking, there's no idea of vihitzilu. You can't have vihitzilu in mishpat. Mishpat can only be a search for the truth. That's the way it works in the case of dinei mamonos, which is essentially, it's an abstract phenomenon with no particular objective. We have no interest in the outcome, totally disinterested. But what I'm trying to explain is that in dinei nefashos, it's not disinterested in that sense. Now, disinterested is not a bad thing in general. Disinterested implies purely objective search for the truth, regardless of the outcome, regardless of the effect. So that's generally speaking good. You want people to be searching for the truth. That's not the case in dinei nefashos. Rather, it has a specific objective, and that is the tzilu, to save the individual on the basis of, but the only way to save him over here is through a schus, through what would constitute a valid judicial decision. Otherwise, see, the Hatzalah has to take place within the framework of Mishpat. Within the framework of Mishpat. See, you can't just make up nonsense and say, I find them innocent because of some nonsensical thing. You can't do that. That's not Mishpat. But within the framework of Mishpat, the objective is to search, to find those lechusim that already exist within the framework. Yeah, the Rambam in Perek Beis, that's in Sanhedrin, Perek Beis, Halacha Gimel, Eima Midin, B'chol HaSanhedrin, Lo Zakein Muflag B'Shanim. You can't appoint a Zakein exceedingly old. Lo Saris, or someone who's a Saris. B'mnei Sheyesh B'han Avzarius, because they have a certain type of cruelty. Generally speaking, a sage, someone who's Muflag B'Shanim, is someone that we respect in terms of the acquisition of wisdom. Exceedingly great in the acquisition of wisdom. So this should strike you as being a strange type of halacha. He's excluded from the Sanhedrin. And then it also mentions v'lo misha ein lo banim, and also one who does not have children. Kedei shehei rachman, so that the person should be a rachman. I mean, so we have to understand this point. Well, if the objective is that you don't want someone ever to be executed, if that's the point, so put people that are anti-death penalty. But such a thing is obviously ludicrous. It's ludicrous to even talk like that. You can't have anyone that's anti-death penalty, it seems to me, a Torah scholar. The Torah is not interested in your personal feelings about an issue. It goes by the din of the Torah. The din of the Torah is that there is such a thing as a death penalty for very serious, what the Torah regards as very serious crimes. Of course, we see that that's one thing. There's a big dichotomy. This is a fascinating aspect of Torah law. Our Torah law is different, that there is the death penalty. There is such a thing. But there's a big disparity between having the law on the book, so to speak, and the actual implementation. The actual implementation of the death penalty, as we're seeing right now, while it is to be implemented, it's not there just on the books for the sake of a moral lesson. Like you have the parsha of Ben Sora Mora, the rebellious child, that Lo Hayav Lo Nivra, never was. The Torah did not give that parsha for practicality. It's never going to be. Never going to be a case of Ben Sora Mora. So why is it there? To learn ideas, to learn concepts. This is not the case. The death penalty, was implemented. The Rambam in Yud Dalad, Perek Yud Dalad Halacha Yud, that Beis Din is supposed to go about it l'siyashev, to take it very slowly, very seriously. V'lahamtin, v'lo yitzu, they can't rush. In dinei nefashas, v'chol Beis Din shehargu nefesh v'shev hashadim. If a Beis Din killed somebody in 7 years, harei elu chavlana. It's like they're we're seeing that the translated violent, a violent Beis Din, implying that they're too aggressive. This implying some kind of a defect. And there's a whole discussion in the Gemara, but the Rambam chooses this version. If the Beis Din executes someone once in 7 years, it tells you something about the character. It's critical. There's a certain criticism. Well, what's the criticism? Apparently the criticism is that they weren't able to find the schus. Once in 7 years, my goodness. Either you're assuming that this is a society of perfect people and you don't have to try anybody. Or no, I don't think that's the idea. The idea would be that the system is designed to enable you to find the schus. But then he says, Afal pi kein, im ira lahem laharog b'chol yom v'yom hargin. But if the reality is such that the society has deteriorated and there's a time when you have to execute, every day you have to do it. Then he goes into the idea that we're going to take up, that you don't try, Beis Din doesn't try two separate cases, capital cases on one day. The idea over here is that you can't put somebody on the Sanhedrin who you know is emotionally disposed towards acquittal, period. Emotionally, they're totally opposed to conviction, they're totally opposed to the death penalty, and that's not what he's saying. But it means to say that a dayan, by the way, these individuals that he's eliminated are people who otherwise are entirely qualified to be dayan. The one that doesn't have children, the one who's a saris, the one who's very, very old. We're talking about people who, are, other than this factor, are perfectly suited to be on the Sanhedrin, which means they're highly perfected individuals. They have smicha. So they are capable of judging, of dayanus. So what's wrong? What is this issue? But I think this really proves the point that there's a difference between someone who is, let's say, disinterested, but involved in the search, like two scientists who are searching for a cure for a particular disease. Both of them are people of integrity, of knowledge, of professionalism, and are going to be involved, fully involved in the search. But one of them has a child who is suffering from that disease. And the other one does not have any relative who's suffering from that disease. Now, given that all other factors are equal, okay, of course it's a hypothetical, which one would you prefer, if you were involved, which one would you prefer to be, if you only had to choose one, who would you choose to work on the case? It would seem that people would choose the one who has a personal interest as well. But why? You're saying the other scientist is not going to put all of his energy into the search?
Is the Rambam there only talking to Fushos?
It's talking about the Nefashos. Yeah. It's talking about Sanhedrin, because Sanhedrin deals with the Nefashos. For Dinei Mamonis, it's not a problem. Dinei Mamonis, none of these cases would be excluded. Because it means that aside from one's knowledge, one's abstract knowledge, there's another element which determines the outcome. There's an interesting point here. And that is the amount of energy that a person mobilizes to achieve the objective. The emotions play a role. The disposition of an individual. And that's the same, by the way, this is something you can learn from. It's a Musar Haskel, that in terms of learning, in terms of success, in any endeavor, it's not simply a question of who is the most intelligent. That's not the most significant factor. The most significant factor is the determination, is the will, is the spirit. If a person, even if a person does not have such a great IQ, I mean, in terms of success in learning, of course, obviously a person has to have a certain amount of intelligence, but by and large, the most determinative factor is that determination that a person brings to it, the energy, the effort, the determination, the motivation, the ability to engage in a tremendous amount of effort to achieve the objective. That is the most significant factor. So you see that plays a role over here. That is to say that it is a disqualification of an individual that's lacking in a certain emotional type of a sympathy, which would be very, very useful to have in this case. That comes into the picture. In many areas of life, with different doctors and so on and so forth, and they're professional, we're not charging negligence. It's not that these people will be negligent, and not that they are. The Zakein Muflag is going to come in and say, that's it, kill him, fry him. We're not saying anything. That's absurd to say that. He's a serious Dayan. He's going to search for the truth. But what we're looking for is, clearly, there's got to be a tilt over here in terms of the underlying disposition. It's got to be in favor. What is he in favor of? What outcome is he seeking? What's he searching for? Now, once he engages in the search, he can't distort his mind and come up with crazy ideas. That's not a valid saving. The saving has to be through the instrument of a valid gemar din, a psak din. Just like a doctor can't just come up with some kind of a crazy solution which doesn't work. So that's the combination. That the individual who's most suited to be able to be involved in Hatzalah, but the medium of the Hatzalah has to be through a appropriate judicial decision, which makes sense. These people would be qualified to serve with Dinin Mominus. The only criteria would be is the person knowledgeable, he knows the halacha, and he's capable of being objective. He can put aside all of the emotions. These people are objective, and they're capable of putting aside all of their emotions. It's not because we're saying they can't put aside all their emotions, but the way they're structured, their desire, that type of a desire to find the schus is not that strong. They may be just concerned about the truth. The amount of energy that's going to be involved, it has to be done with rachmanis. Let's put it this way. The dina nefashos has to be done from the framework, from the vantage point of someone who's a merachim. That's what you see emerging over here. That's what he said. The person that doesn't have children is lacking in that element of rachmanis. You know, the Mefarshim pointed out. Person that went through Tzar Gidol Banim, who raised children, who recognizes the difficulties. You see that. I mean, someone who's a parent will have a different attitude towards a juvenile delinquent. Someone who's not, never had children, is going to be much more harsh and critical. Criticals, because they themselves never went through the experience, the difficulties of raising a child. So essentially, the individual who's fit to serve has to be someone who, all things being equal, can be regarded as a Rahman. Can't be done without Rahmanas. Actually, getting back to Yosef and the brothers, this is what the brothers themselves acknowledged. The first declaration that the brothers made after the sin of selling Yosef, actually first they wanted to kill him, then they sold him. Years later, when they encountered Yosef, they didn't know it was Yosef, and they were being mistreated, they were being subjected to the accusations. And they began to realize that this is very well could be a punishment. So they started to have hirhurei tshuva, thoughts of tshuva. And the first thing that they said is, Aval Hashem anachnu alachinu. But indeed, we are guilty concerning our brother. But listen carefully to what they said, and listen carefully to what they did not say. Asher ra'ino tzaras nafsho, in that we saw the suffering of his soul, b'yischanu eleinu, when he pleaded with us, v'lo shamanu, when we didn't listen to him, al kein ba aleinu hatzara hazos. That's why this catastrophe is occurring to us. So they didn't say that they were wrong. At this point in time, they did not say that they were wrong, that they the judgment was incorrect. They didn't say that. Then Reuven tells them, then Reuven says, I said to you, Al techtu vayelad v'lo shemata. Then he brings up the idea that you sinned against him. What you did was wrong. They only acknowledged one thing. What did they acknowledge? They were not saying at this point that it was wrong, but they, the fact that they judged it without rachmanis. We closed ourselves off to that element of rachmanis. Not that they were wrong. Meaning, had they opened themselves up to that element of rachmanis, maybe they, after the whole drish v'chakira, after the whole masu matan, they may have come to the same conclusion. They weren't saying that that the conclusion was wrong, but the process, the manner in which they went about it was with hardened heart, without, not from the vantage point of rachmanis. That's what they were acknowledging. So you have no right to engage in dinei nefashos without the element of rachmanis. Another aside, in dinei mamonos, to the contrary, you have to put aside rachmanis. Any expression of rachmanis would be a distortion of mishpat. That's why there's all kinds of laws. You can't show any kind of hakaras panim, any kind of recognition to the one or the two parties. Sometimes it's a wealthy party against the poor party. So there's a temptation to show respect for the wealthy person. To treat him with more respect, you're not allowed to do that. You can't treat the wealthy person any differently. Can't show any respect. But sometimes the other emotion, sometimes there's an emotion to favor the poor person. And give him a break. This other guy—that's a very strong emotion. This guy's a multi-billionaire. What does he care? The amount is, as far as he's concerned, is meaningless. The other guy's starving. So let him win the case. I could see many people, many judges today. That's a very prevalent kind of a thing. That you have that kind of a—it's an emotional phenomenon. Especially if you're suing a company, a corporation. You don't have this concept of absolute justice. There's a lot of emotions. This poor guy, whatever. Never mind what the letter of the law is. It's rachmanis. Let's show rachmanis to the poor guy. And the corporation, so they're a big corporation. They won't miss this money. That is a complete aberration. That would be totally prohibited according to the Torah. Tzedek, tirdof. Everything has to be based upon tzedek. You're not allowed to tilt towards any kind of an emotion. That's it. You want to help the poor person, fine, but that has to be in the framework of tzedakah, not to do a distortion of mishpat. Dinei nefashos is a different concept of mishpat because you have the element of v'hitzilu. So again, but it can't be a distortion of justice, but within the framework of justice, it has to be a mechanism of v'hitzilu. Take a look at Yud Aleph, Halacha Hey, where the Rambam says, Hamesis ein dino kasher dinei nefashos. His din, his judgment, is not like other dini nefashos. Mechamim lo ase'edim. We utilize methods of entrapment. The Rambam explains that in Hilchos Avodas Chachamim. V'ein tzarech hasra, k'shar ha'ne'erogim. He doesn't require hasra. As other ne'erogim. V'im yotzei mibeis nezakei, and if he goes out of beis nezakei, innocent, and someone offers a reason why he really should be guilty, you bring him back. Here you bring him back, l'chov. But you don't bring him back, l'schus. If he goes out guilty and someone presents a reason for acquittal, we don't bring him back. We execute him. V'ein tohen l'mesis. And we don't bring forth any kinds of defense. The Sanhedrin itself does not offer defense for the mesis. U'moshivin b'dino. And in his case, Zakein Visaris, whom he shein lo bottom. So you see, these individuals are perfectly qualified to be on Sanhedrin, but they can't serve in a regular case of dinei nefashos. But if it's pertaining to a mesis, we bring to the contrary. You stack the bench, so to speak, with people who are really not inclined on this emotional level to exert themselves for the sake of schus. Why? Kedei shelo yirachmu alav. So the dine nefashos of a meisus is not structured from the standpoint of rachmanis. But this proves, I'm only mentioning this over here to show you that other cases of dine nefashos are founded, structured on the from the vantage point of rachmanis. Because apparently it would seem that, as we've established the principle, that the function of the masu matin in dine nefashos is to create the matir. Without this type of a masu matan of hatzala, Besdin does not have any kind of a matir to kill the person, to execute the individual. However, what do you see over here? That's not the case by emesis. By emesis, Besdin has a matir to execute him, essentially in accordance with din. To the contrary, if he's found, he loses. By the way, once we're on the Rambam, the way the Rambam is formulated it over here, this sheds light on another problem, a problem we discussed yesterday. I just want to point out that with regard to this point about emesis, that the Rambam learns that the din of emesis is different than anybody else who's chayav misa, din in the fashos. On a very fundamental, this is a major point. That is to say, machzirin, we are machzir him l'chov, and ain machzirin l'schus. It's the exact opposite as to that which pertains to any other case of an individual's chayav misa. Now, bear in mind that the Rambam derives this principle in general, that machzirin l'schus v'ein machzirin l'chova, not from the pasuk of Naki v'tzadik al tarav, but rather from his interpretation of losana al riv, as we learned yesterday. It seems to me, at least at first glance, that the change, that the difference in terms of the outcome by emesis would be more difficult if you're going to learn the other way. If you're going to learn v'naki v'tzadik al taharog. And that's why if he's naki, anyone who's innocent, you can't execute him. That's why machzirin l'schus, because maybe he's innocent. Tzadik is someone who was found innocent. He has a shame tzadik. If that's the case, then what's the difference between emesis and anybody else? The Rambam is learning differently, because the Rambam is learning, the way we're understanding the pasuk, that pasuk really establishes the parameters that pertain to the masu matan of the nefashos, which creates the matir for Besdin to execute the person. However, that's all true with regard to individuals for which a specific matir is required. When it comes to emesis doesn't require that matir. To the contrary, emesis he's supposed to kill. So all of those protections, basically, which form the matir, which most of them have to do with the conduct of the masu matan, that doesn't apply to emesis. Because the element of rachmanos is removed. In the case, to the contrary, in the case of the Rambam has everything founded upon the principle of rachmanos, that the masu matan has to be done from the vantage point of rachmanos, because that's really v'itzilu. Once you remove that, by the case to the contrary, the halacha by emesis is that you're not allowed to be merachem on him. It's also to be merachem on him. That's why he says, he explains, she'achzarias al elu, shematin esa'am achrei ahevel, because cruelty towards those who seek to ensnare the nation, to cause them to err after hevel, rachemim hu ba'olam, is mercy for the world. So it's a different. It's true. It's true here too. The Torah doesn't abandon the principle of rachmim. The Torah never abandons the principle of rachmim, except even rachmim is something which has to be understood. The Rambam didn't just leave that. The question we asked was, why did the Rambam just simply say that you're supposed to be an achzar on the basis? Why does he have to give this explanation? Because he's saying that the Torah never abandons the principle of rachmim. The only question is, how is it to be understood? It can't just be formulated with regard to the life of this particular individual. It has to be formulated with regard to the effects, the bigger picture, the metaphysical picture. That's what he's saying, that in this particular case, Rachman has to be expressed in a different way. The true Rachmanis over here is really to kill him. To kill him because the damage that he's doing in terms of the entire system, to allow that to be unaddressed would be Achzarius. Here it expresses itself. Here Achzarius is really Rachmanis. You have to understand that. Kalamarachim al-Achzar, whoever has mercy for the cruel. Misguided Rachmanis is the worst defect, the most destructive phenomenon. That's what the whole world is consumed with that today. Misguided. You see, the sympathies of sick people, for example, are mainly with the Palestinians, with the terrorists, with the murderers, and the tremendous hatred for the Jews. No one is saying the Jews are perfect, but they're talking about people that have an ordinary democratic society, want to establish an opportunity and let people live in peace, basically. Now, all the deviousness, all the tremendous hatred that the whole world has, and this misbegotten sympathy, this sick, distorted sympathy, it applies even within this country too. I mean, can't go to war against Iraq, can't go to war, you know, and we're the bad ones. America's the bad ones. That type of an attitude. It's a very prominent kind of a phenomenon. It's not a question of a legitimate difference of opinion. It's a question of people with sick emotions, really sick.
George Will.
Serious sickness.
George Will.
While we're on the subject of making connections, you see also that the greatest threat, to the Jews, who are the Macesim today? Is this something which is just a historical phenomenon, or does it have any relevance today? I'm referring to the reformers, to those who want to distort Judaism. We just mentioned that right now there's a big debate within the conservative movement about modifying its whole attitude towards homosexuality. We discussed this yesterday in Ashkafa. Basically, in terms of new developments, new feelings, new emotions, in order to make it more harmonious with contemporary fads, contemporary ways of thinking, it's one thing to separate yourself and establish your own religious system. You can do whatever you want. I don't care if you're Jewish, but don't associate it with Judaism. To destroy Judaism, to distort it, in order to accommodate all of these contemporary hedonistic types of attitudes, that's Mises. And then to present it as though this is legitimate Judaism, this is legitimate. And this is the way Judaism always has been, a developmental type of phenomenon, and to mislead people, generations and generations, to mislead them into a falsification of Judaism, that's the Mises. That's the worst sin of all. It's the most destructive element, aside from the fact that they're the ones that always claim when the Orthodox attack them, what they're doing, so they point their finger at the Orthodox, divisive. That's the big word, you're being divisive. They're the ones that are being divisive. They're destroying the Judaism. This is an assault on Judaism. You're uprooting what kept us together is the Torah. This is the Torah. By making this change, introducing this type of a change, you're destroying Judaism and you're destroying the Jewish people. That's the divisive part. The Rambam learns that the phenomenon over here of the Azarius is really an expression of Rachman. And he says, L'man Yoshev Hashem Mecharon Apo, B'nasam L'cha Rachman, that God should return from his anger, so to speak, and give you Rachman. But anyways, I was using this Rambam to establish, I think you can extrapolate from here, that this is the foundation in Dinei Nefashos, in general, that it has to be undertaken from the vantage point of Rachman. And that's the way it's incorporated into the whole Masu Matan. You see that from the case of Mesis. From the other case, by the case of Mesis, where that's an exception, and there, to the contrary, it's not conducted from the standpoint of Rachamim. So obviously you can deduce from this case that in all other cases, it is from the standpoint of Rachamim. We're going to get started now on the next piece of Gemara. Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, on the bottom, three lines from the bottom. Dini nefashos danin bayom. Okay. Back to the Mishnah, it says that Dini mamonos danin bayom. Dini mamonos, you judge by day. V'gomrin balayla. But you're allowed to complete it balayla. So apparently by Dini mamonos, you can't begin by night. It must begin by day. But once you began by day, you can conclude it at night. Dini nefashos, and Dini nefashos danin bayom, v'gomrin bayom. So Dini nefashos, every aspect of the din, the beginning and the gemar din and so forth, can only be by day. You can't have Dini nefashos by at night. So the gemara asked the question, Minahani Mili, from whence do we know this? Amar Rafsimi Barchia, Rafsimi Barchia said, Amar Kra, it says in the Pasuk, Vahoka Osam Lashem Neged Hashemesh. And as we'll soon learn, that to hang them before God, Neged Hashemesh, in daytime, broad daylight, so to speak. That's talking about the case where the Jews sinned by Baal Peor. So it's important. It's important to remember what the chait was. The chait was Avodah Zarah. So what do you learn from this? What do you see? So Moshe was commanded to hang them. First of all, hanging itself is a problem because that's not one of the four forms of execution. But so what? So all it says was that they hung them Neged Hashemesh. How does that prove Gomer Mayom? Yeah. How does that prove anything as far as what we're concerned with? Yeah, the point is that if we can establish that the execution in the case where they're found guilty is by day, so then you can deduce that the Gemara Din has to be by day. Because if you're going to say that the Gemara Din was Balayla, and then they didn't execute him till the next day, then you have the problem of Inui Hadin. So you now want to subject the person. Once a person is found guilty, he has to be executed immediately. And you can't subject him to Inui Hadin. So if that's the case, if they couldn't conclude, that's why they can only try a person if there's no conflict. You can't conclude the din at a time when you couldn't execute him, because then you have the problem of Inui Hadin. Alright? Amar Rav Chista said, Minayin lo ka shehi taliya. How do we know that hoka is taliya, is hanging? Dechsiv, because it says, Volkanim lashem begivashol, bechir Hashem. Alright, so this is a story in Tanakh. I assume you went through the story. It's a complicated story. I'm not going to go into the complexities of the story itself. The Gemara is just deriving halachas from what took place over there. But essentially, it's with regard to the Givonim. There was a group of non-Jews who used trickery at the time of Yeshua to make a treaty. A treaty was made, and they were permitted to live in the land. And then it's not clear exactly what Shaul did, but they had a taina. They had an argument against Shaul, that Shaul had been responsible for perpetrating some kind of a massacre against them. However, I'm not going into all the issues. And then there was a famine for 3 years in the land, a drought. So David inquired of Hashem through the Navi, or in Baturim, and it had to do with this chait, this, you know. And so David tried to pacify them, and they wouldn't be pacified, and only seven descendants of Shaul had to be hung. Okay, this was done on the basis of the Urim Vatumim. And the whole idea essentially was really a Kiddush Hashem, that as we see, that people would go by and they'll say, what kind of a nation is this, where the children of kings are executed because of crimes that were done to strangers, that were gerim, the most lowly group in the entire nation. So that constitutes a Kiddush Hashem. As I say, I'm not going into all the particulars because you can raise many kinds of questions about the whole story. So let's just leave that for the time being. So here it's describing the fact that they were hung. V'hokanam l'Hashem b'giv ha'shol b'chir Hashem. Uchsiv v'tikach ritzpa basaya es ha'sak v'tateu lo l'atzur v'tchilas k'tzir. So Ritzpa Basaya was the mother, one of the mothers of the children. And she covered the bodies. So Rashi says, Alma Magulin Hayu. Therefore we could deduce that they were uncovered. Lafisha Tluyan ala Eitzim, because they were hanging on trees. V'imisham lo tolin nivlaso. And if you raise an objection, that is to say that it's prohibited to hang the body overnight. In the case where a person is executed, there are certain cases of mainly those executions by skila, or even only those who are executed for the chait of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is with skila. So they have to be nitlin, they have to be hung, the body has to be hung. It's a form of degradation. However, the pasuk itself says that you have to lo solin nivlaso ala eitz. You can't allow the body to lie overnight on the tree because it's a degradation. It's a degradation of the tzelem elokim. Ki kilas elokim toloi. It's a degradation of God, so to speak, because man is created in his image. So on the one hand, he has to be hung. On the other hand, the body has to be removed immediately. They would hang him up and take him down, basically. But you couldn't allow the body to lie there. And certainly if you allow the body to lie there overnight, that's the lo sase, midioraisa. That's the lav. By the way, from this we deduce, this is the source, you probably are aware of that by, in an ordinary case, not a execution, when a Jew dies, he's supposed to bury him immediately and bury the person as quickly as possible. And if you allow the body to lie overnight without burial, so you're over the losasa of losola and vloso. So even though this is stated in the case of hanging, but according to the Tarsh Bal Peh, it applies to any case where a person dies, that it's bizi hames. It's a degradation of the mace to leave the body out overnight. That is to say, the actual losasa, the amount of time which would cause you to be in violation of the losase would be overnight.
He's dead before he's put up.
In this case that we're talking about, the person is dead. He's executed, and then he's hung up. He's not, because hanging is not one of the forms of execution. I just want to point out, though, that in Bizman Azad, this is relevant. You're not allowed to leave a body overnight. In certain cases where you'll see that it's done and it's not a violation, it's only if it's l'chvodo. If it's too late in the day and you can't make arrangements, or people that would be there, that would be to the person's honor to be there, can't get there in time, things of that sort. But where it's done because of whatever, like laziness or other things are considered to be more important, that's a bizui hames. Now, continuing with this development, uchsiv, and it says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, and God said to Moshe, Kach is called Rosh Ha'am. Let's take a look at the pasuk for a second. The pasuk in Chafei, in Bamidbar Chafei, which describes the event, the incident that took place with the Jews sinned with Benos Moab and became involved in the chait of Avodah Zarah, the worst chait, Baal Peor. So Vayitzamet Yisrael, Baal Peor, that the Jews were drawn to Baal Peor, Vayichar Afar Hashem Yisrael, and Charon Af. And the Rambam points out that the only time that the term of Charon Af, anger, burning anger, is pertaining to God, is used is with regard to Avodah Zarah. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, and God said to Moshe, Kachas kol Roshei Ha'am, take all of the Roshei Ha'am, all the leaders of the people, V'hoka osam l'Hashem neged hashamash, and hang them before God in broad daylight. V'yashov charon af Hashem Yisrael. and the anger of God will be removed. If you read the pasuk literally, it seems to be saying, take the leaders and hang them. That's what it seems to be saying. So that's what the... Getting back to the Gemara now, that's what the Gemara says. Uchsivan, it says, Vayomar Shem al Moshe. Kachas called Rosh Ha'am. God said to Moshe, take all the heads of the people. So now the Gemara asks the question. Apparently this is a valid Havamina over here. Im ha'am chatu, if the people sinned, Rosh Ha'am machatu. So what was the sin of the Rosh Ha'am? So the Gemara apparently is taking the pasuk literally. That is to say that the instruction was to execute the Rosh Ha'am. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, that God said to Moshe, Chalak lehem batei dinin. That's the way you have to read the pasuk. That is, Kachas kol Rosh Ha'am, take all the leaders of the people, now you have to insert, and establish many batei dinim, and hoka, and judge them, and those who are found guilty, that hoka osam. That's the real meaning. In other words, no, you shouldn't take it to mean that the Rosh Ha'am themselves were going to be executed. So now the question is, my tama, what's the reason for doing this, for establishing many batei dinim? Ilema mishum she'ein danin shnayim biyom echad. If you say it's because of the prohibition that you're not supposed to judge two cases, that's two cases of dinei nefashos. You're not allowed to judge two cases of dinei nefashos in one day. So Amar Rav Chista said, Lo shanu ela b'shtei misos. That's only if you're talking about two different types of execution, two different types of death penalty. Then you can't do two in the same day. Aval b'misa achas donin. But if it pertains to one death penalty, that is trying two cases that carry the same penalty, as we'll soon see, it's not just that. It's the same crime with the same penalty. That they're permitted to judge in one day. So what they're saying over here is that this shouldn't be a problem, because it was basically all the people that were being tried for the same crime, which carried the same penalty. That is the crime of Avodah Zarah, and the penalty would be the penalty of Skila. So therefore, the Gemara is questioning, what was the instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe to establish many batei dinim? It would seem that that's the reason. The reason is because each one would be limited. But if you're going to tell me that the problem is that limitation, that they can't try more than one case, that doesn't apply over here. Ela kedei sheyashav charonaf miYisrael. But no, that's not the reason. But rather it's to bring about a cessation of God's anger against Israel. Well, how would that happen? What's going on over here? The case of Shaul's children, that generally speaking, as we said, you're not allowed to leave them overnight. And here they were left for a long time, for a long period of time. So how could that be? That's contrary to the Torah. That's what's referred to as Horoah Shah. That you're allowed to. Beis Din has the power. As long as it's a Horoah Shah. To uproot one of the laws of the Torah on the basis of a temporary, something which is needed. In this case, it was needed because of Kiddush Hashem. So that's in the framework of Hora Shah. That's the answer, obviously. It's an exception. Or a Navi, for example. A Navi has a right to implement this. You see, that's Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel. That was Hora Shah, because how is he allowed to bring karbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash? But he did so for the purpose of uprooting Avodah Zarah. Again, it was Hora Shah. If he came to say that law is no longer applicable, then he'd be a Navi Sheker. Yeah, the question as to how you could derive that Dinei Nefashos, you can't Don Balayla from Mahoka. The Meiri on Kufchav Zion says that the Nefashos in Gomer Behen, that's a din El Biyom. The din in Nefashos, you can only conclude the din by day, as we explained in the Mishnah. Now, the support for this is Vahoka Osam Lashem Neged Hashemesh. Now, that's in line with the halacha, that they were over the Avodah Zarah, they were Chayev Skila, and then the bodies have to be hung. Now, the hanging is when? The hanging is right after the execution. So the hanging is by day. It says Neged Hashemesh. So that's, by the way, that's part, it's not just that then they are hung, that's part of the execution. But if you want to argue and say that this doesn't prove anything, it just proves that the execution has to be by day. But why don't we say that they concluded the din at night and they executed them the next day? You can't say that. Because if that is the case, then you are going to be involved in a problem of inui hadin. There's a footnote over here. Number 150. And it mentions that the position of the Meiri is open to question, his deduction. And there are those indeed who have questioned it and have come to a different conclusion. Because you could raise a question, if the issue is Inui Hadin, so then that in and of itself does not preclude having the Gemara Din Balayla. You can have it balayla, close to the morning. Close to the morning, Ashmaras Boker, close to dawn. And then, without any delay, you can have the execution by day. Now, the footnote mentions different sources. And those who are opposed to the Meiri have a different answer. They say that that's not the derivation. The derivation is from the pasuk, the plain meaning of the pasuk. Because the pasuk is kachas kol ha'am, and we've already established that taking all the people is a reference to judging, right? Pirush, lishpot, for mishpot, kadiyam b'samach. And the conclusion of the pasuk is, then it says, vahoka osam, neged hashemesh. But neged hashemesh is not necessarily just a reference to the immediate thing which preceded it, it's a reference to the entire pasuk. So the Neged HaShemesh will serve to modify everything, including Kachas Kol Ha'am. The Neged HaShemesh Arei Shenamikoi. The Mishpat Umisa Tavayu Neged HaShemesh Be'inon. That's the way they want to learn. So there's an interesting machlokas over here. Just some technical issues in terms of the Gemara. The Gemara first has to establish Neged HaShemesh, that Neged HaShemesh is referring to the punishment, the execution. And it'll make its deductions from there. So the pasuk says, Vahoka. Vahoka osam. Now, the Rav Chisda is saying, how do we know that Hoka is a reference to Tliya? Okay? So he quotes, Vahokanam Lashem the Givashal. Alright? Now the question has been raised, why do you need two pasukim? Because then it quotes another pasuk. So the question is, why do you need two psukim to establish it? The answer to that is simple, that what the Gemara is doing is, it's first of all searching for another source where that term is used. So we've discovered another source where that term is used. Vokanam Lashem v'givashol. Of course, now the question is, how do I know that that's referring to Tliya? So that second pasuk is with regard to that case. The case of Ritzvah Basaya is a reference to that case, that the second case we're talking about, the case of this, the children of Shaul. So from what she did, we could deduce that they had been hung and she was covering the bodies. So now you've established a point that Hokah is Tliya. That's just a technical matter of pshat. The next thing we want to take note of is, it would seem, that the Gemara is seriously raising a question. What is the sin of the Rosh Ha'am? That is, it seems that the Gemara is taking seriously the possibility that they were to be executed. Or unless you want to say it's just their rhetorical question, that's not a real serious question. But let's bear that in mind. The pasuk is structured that way. Even though, in accordance with the Tarsh Bal Peh, the real interpretation, we understand that it's not referring to them, but the pasuk itself is structured that way. Then you have the issue of you can't judge two cases on one day. Now, what's the reason for that? Take a look at Rashi. She'ein bezdin echad don shnayim biyom echad. That one bezdin can't judge two cases in one day. So Rashi says, except if it's the only time this applies is where it's shtei misos. That's the Gemara says that. So Rashi says, by shtei misos who? D'ein dunin. That's the case where they can't judge. L'fisha ein zu domo l'zu. Because each case is different. The tzarech limtso tam l'divrehem. And they have to search for a reason. A kan v'kan. V'yasei l'ikal kuli. Shemelo yechapsu k'chal ha'tzorech. All right, that we understand. It's two different kinds of cases, two different areas of halacha. So in order to put enough energy into searching through thoroughly to understand each one, you don't do that. That makes sense. The idea that Bezdin cannot try two cases, two capital cases in one day, makes sense. On a simple basis that we're talking about human beings and it means to say they've got to give their full, undivided attention to the issue in front of them. And insofar as that's a different issue, there's many different areas of halacha. The person's preoccupied in one area of halacha. You don't ask him in another area. He's preoccupied. That's the way the mind works. So that makes sense. I have no problem with that, especially in light of the fact that we're talking about the tremendous burden to really go into it in depth and search, and not to reach any hasty conclusions. So that makes perfect sense. If anything, I would say the question would be, how come you're allowed to do it if it's one misa? But we see, one second, we see it's not just simply one misa, but take a look at Tosfos, or Rashi, first Rashi, Avol misa achas, but if it's one misa, v'avera achas, and the same sin, then you can judge. Which seems to be, because then it's sufficiently clear. That is to say that you're dealing with the same issues. Yeah, that's what we say. In other words, what emerges from this is that the prohibition is in dealing with two cases that involve you in two different sets of issues. Halachic issues. That you can't do. But it's not two per se. It's not a quantitative phenomenon, but it's a qualitative phenomenon. That's how we understand this limitation. That Bezdin cannot be done on two areas which are different with regard to the qualitative aspect. Which makes perfect sense, because each one is an area of itself and you have to get into it and you have to master it, and it requires a complete devotion of your energy, and therefore it can't be any impediment as far as that's concerned. But if it's the same crime and it's the same penalty, so it's the same issues. So, if it's the same issues, that's not a problem. To the contrary, you could say they're really involved. Once you're involved in the issue, you tend to do a better job because you're totally involved and focused and clear in that issue. But Tosfos says something interesting. Al misa achas donin v'hodetani b'tosefta, that which we learned in Tosefta, ein donin shnayim biyom echad, afilu noef v'no ofes. The Perek Nigmar Adin. So Tosis raises a question. I mean, seemingly raises it. He's not really raising a question. He's just pointing out something which might seem to contradict this, because the Sefta says that you can't, the Noif and the Noifas, the adulterer, the man and the woman, and both of them are Chayiv Misa for adultery. Same crime, and it's not, ostensibly it's the same punishment, but you can't judge both parties. You can't judge on the same day. So that would seem to be a contradiction to what we've just learned. So what's his answer? Tosfos answers the question by saying, Mukmi lo bevas kohen uboala. So he's saying it's like this. In all cases, ordinary cases, this rule doesn't apply. Case of adultery, the death penalty is by chenek, choking. So you could try both parties on the same day, because it's the same crime, same punishment. Except in this case, bas kohen, uboala. If a person commits adultery with the married daughter of a kohen, so he gets the punishment of chenek, but she gets the more serious, severe execution of sreifa. Doesn't mean they burn the body externally. It means pouring down hot lead down the throat and burning the insides. It says, "Ubasish kohen kisechel lisnos esavia himechalelas ba'eish tisaref." So the daughter of a kohen, if she's involved in znus, in adultery, she's executed in accordance with a different penalty with the one of Srefa. So that's what Tosfos is pointing out. It's interesting because it's the same crime, but there's a little bit of a change. Technically speaking, there's a change in terms of the execution, so that already makes it a different issue. He b'Srefa of Uwal b'Chenek. So Tosfos says, that's how he answers the question, or that's how, if you're going to raise a question from there, then he concludes, if you were. He concludes that a situation like that, where it's the same crime but different punishments, he maintains that's to be treated as two separate cases. And you cannot try them both on the same day.